crazy porks who host this show. They give relationship advice that you ought to know. Your thirst for entertainment, they will quench, cause Stephanie's a darling and Mike is a mensch. Pork therapy, advice this good is a rarity. It's cool, fun, and introspective. Relationship talk from a liberty perspective. Oh, and did I mention you can leave a message, you can voice a question, a joke, a comment, or something more at 419-PT-LOVE-4. Pork therapy, scatly-dee-bop, shabba-dooey. You'll revel in hilarity. It's pork therapy.
You know, Mike, I was just thinking that we haven't had nearly enough of Mike singing on our podcast
recently. Oh, yes,
recently.
We have. We have had plenty.
We've had enough forever.
Forever. Never singing again. I wish I knew a song with never in it. I would have sung it right there.
What about that, what is it? Never gonna get it, never gonna get it.
Oh, I have that song on in Vogue.
Yeah.
Never gonna get it, never gonna get it, never gonna get it, never gonna get it.
What is the main part of that song? I don't know.
But one of their songs is Free Your Mind and Your Ass Will Follow. That's good.
Oh, right.
That's
yes, that's a very famous
good
one.
Good advice.
Okay, so anyway, we probably introduce ourselves, right?
Oh, this is Mike.
And this is Stephanie.
And we are
pork therapy. And we do like to sing, but we like to talk even more, so we'll be doing a lot of that on this episode, right?
Yeah,
Mike?
A lot.
Yeah.
We'll be doing a lot of reading and some talking.
Yeah, and some talking. And if you want us to talk about your question or issue, please send us an email at questions@porktherapy.com.
Or you
right,
can
Mike?
Call us. That's right, Stephanie. Or you can call us at area code 419-PT-LOVE-4. But why would someone want to write or call us?
Well, they could ask us their relationship questions, which we are a show about relationships from a liberty-oriented perspective.
Right. We talk about all kinds of relationships, friendships, you know, family, yeah. Lovers, work, and person who sends you a Christmas card once a year and thinks they're your friend, well, any kind of relationship, and we have a liberty bent.
Yes, exactly. And we also talk about communication.
Yes.
That's one of the themes
it's
on our
key
show.
In all relationships.
It is. That was our old slogan, and now it's relationship talk from a liberty perspective.
Right.
But no, communication comes up on the show a lot, yeah. And one of the related topics that we recently started exploring is the idea of nonviolent communication, which is I guess you could call it a communication style that was coined by Marshall Rosenberg, and we'll put a little link to some nonviolent communication links at the beginning of in our show notes. But we've done a couple shows. You know, we interviewed Wes Bertrand from Complete Liberty Podcast, and we talked to Wes about nonviolent communication, and then we did another follow-up show after that, talking about our own experiences
or lack
thereof using NVC in our life, because Mike hasn't really gotten too much into it. I've gotten pretty
yes.
deeply into it, so I had a little more to say than he did, but
oh no, I have an equal amount to say. I'm just much more ignorant.
I got you, Mike. Okay, so we received some feedback from a listener who was interested in our NVC or nonviolent communication episodes, because one time we did get this email from a somewhat angry listener who said, don't say NVC, like spell out the whole thing. It's nonviolent communication. So everybody knows what we're talking about. So we're going to say nonviolent communication. Anyway, we had some listener feedback, an extensive listener feedback from Debbie, who blogs at thesuburbanvoluntarist.blogspot.com. And we did take a little look at her blog and thought it was pretty cool. So y'all should go check it out. So Debbie wrote us an email following up on NVC, and we are going to read it and jump in with our comments in the middle of the
okay,
email.
Okay, as we that? Go. That works.
Okay.
And you are going to read it.
Yes. Mike and I made it negotiated. You know, we made a deal.
Negotiated. I ordered it. Make it so. No, we negotiated.
Is that, who is that, Captain Kirk?
No, Captain Picard. You're no Trekkie.
I've lost it, Mike. I used to be so into it.
Really?
Yeah.
I used to be into it, and I'm not, but I still remember that.
Anyway, this is a total tangent.
Okay.
So here's our listener feedback. So Debbie says, hi, I recently found your podcast after listening to Wes Bertrand's podcast on NVC, or nonviolent communication. And then she says, oh, what a web we liberty folks weave. And this is totally true.
Yeah.
Anyway, Debbie goes on, when I first heard about it from Wes's podcast, I was very enthused as to the possibilities. And as a result, I watched lots of the videos that Wes put up in the show notes and found some other items on the web, too. I do not, as of yet, have any real examples of using it in my personal life, so I was curious about this episode of yours and want to thank you for sharing some personal examples.
Interesting.
And I think she's referring to our show where we gave listener feedback after the show where we interviewed Wes and said what happened.
Our own opinions.
Right. When we used NVC or didn't use it, or maybe didn't use it perfectly or successfully, but tried in our own lives. And I would say that it's kind of something that she says she doesn't have any examples of using it in her personal life. And, you know, maybe she's saying that because she doesn't think, like, there hasn't really been any significant conflict that she's encountered. But I think I've used the techniques of nonviolent communication with very small things that I wouldn't really consider conflicts,
mm-hmm.
just kind of discussions. And I've used it with myself when I was maybe feeling something to give myself some empathy.
Hmm.
So I think there are numerous situations in which one can use it every day. I mean, I think I've probably, since learning about it, I have used it multiple times a day, every day in some way. So yeah, that's just throwing that out there. I mean, there have been a few times when I've used it in more dire circumstances or kind of more major situations.
During conflicts?
Not really conflicts. I mean, there was, what I'm thinking of is one time I used nonviolent communication techniques to talk to my parents about the experience of being raised religious and how that impacted me.
You don't think that was a conflict?
Well, I suppose it was, because they thought...
Or at least a potential conflict based on past conversations of the same matter.
Yeah, that's the exact thing.
You thought, if we talk about this, it will be a conflict, so I'm going to use NVC.
No, I didn't think that. I thought, in the past, when I've talked to them about this, I've used this approach that wasn't working, which was a pretty confrontational and sarcastic approach, and I don't think that they
responded very well to it. And it didn't give good results, right? Okay.
Right, at least not the results that I was looking for, which was maybe an acknowledgement that it was not good, and an apology perhaps, or just an acknowledgement that my preferences weren't really respected in that. And I'd never got that before, but by using those techniques, I was able to get through, and after, mm-hmm. you know, just an hour or so, was able to get the results that I wanted. So that was a success for me.
Cool.
So anyway, but it wasn't really a conflict.
Okay.
It never got to that level. It was just, just an honest exchange, I guess.
Okay.
Anyway, so Debbie goes on and says, I do have some thoughts to share based on some of what was said in this episode that I hope will help you and I learn more about it. And her first point is, I was at first annoyed at Mike saying he wasn't totally sure how nonviolent communication could work when he admitted that he has not really investigated it thoroughly enough to draw such a conclusion. Then I realized I was judging. So then she goes on and she says, I had my jackal ears on. I realized Mike was only really sharing his current feeling about it. I know my problem with this will be to empathize more with the other person.
Mine too. That'll be my problem with it. Because it's certainly... I don't think it'll be my problem to learn how to use words a different way. I think it'll be my problem to actually empathize with people who I currently, in my current mindset, I might not want to empathize with. And that'll be the tough part for me.
Yeah, this is a concern that I hear a lot about NVC. And I know I had this, actually, when I first heard about it. And the first time I was considering trying to use it,
mm-hmm.
I definitely had that feeling, too. Well, why should I empathize with this person? You know, basically, why do they deserve my empathy? Why should I treat them like a human being? And, well, there's a couple reasons for that. One is because...
It will help.
You're trying to get maybe... Okay, one is because everybody wants to get their own needs met, too.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to get your needs met, it's the idea is to create a quality connection with another person that will enable both of your needs to get met. And so it could be kind of a selfish reason for empathizing or connecting with this person.
Right, but I still don't think I'm always going to be capable of it. And some of the examples that I believe were given on the CNVC, on the website for nonviolent communication, or in the videos, were that there was a woman who was being raped, or she was like being threatened with rape or something. She was being
There were a couple examples attacked. Of that in the audiobook of nonviolent communication.
Okay, yeah. And I believe she used nonviolent communication and was able to get both of their needs met, and I'm saying that in quotes, by reducing the crime against her to like theft or beating her up or something minor compared to rape.
Yes, it was a woman who was being threatened with rape, right. And then she used NVC, and the attacker just took her purse.
Right.
Which I don't consider that a win either.
Exactly. Yeah. So my point is, yes, she got hurt less than before, but her needs weren't met.
No, not at all.
So, maybe she did it wrong or something, I don't know, but... I don't know if I would always be capable of... Like, if someone was attacking me, and this has happened, I don't know if I'm capable of empathizing with them enough to get their needs met as well as mine. I just want my needs met and safety. But it could very well be that the only way to get that done is to empathize and help them get needs met, too. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I see where you're coming from, Mike. I didn't think that... I wasn't particularly happy with that outcome, either.
Right.
Like,
I'm sure she wasn't happy either, but happier than rape.
Maybe she was happy to not get raped, but yes. I couldn't imagine anyone would be happy with giving up their purse to an attacker.
Right.
So, but then again, maybe it was her only option. You know, maybe she lived in a state where it's illegal to carry guns or something like that. She was disarmed. She had no way to defend herself
other than,
you know, trying to fight this person with her bare hands. Or maybe he had a... weapon and she didn't or something like that. So we don't know what the situation is. Maybe it was a good outcome in the scheme of things, but...
It was certainly a better outcome than rape.
Yeah, of course.
But I just don't see how it was win-win. It was more like...
It may not be the best selling point.
Not lose and
yeah.
not... Yeah,
yeah.
Not lose, not lose.
Yeah. So... Yeah, so that's a problem. Empathizing with the other person, I think that's something that a lot of people see as a difficulty. And I think that's the most common complaint that I've heard about NVC, or the most common criticism. The other one is that people say sometimes, well, it doesn't sound like natural language when you're talking about feelings and needs. And I understand. That makes sense. I mean, most people in our culture do not...
to empathize or to care or to talk about your feelings or their feelings.
Yeah, it's a domination culture, as the NVC jargon goes, right? It's like people don't typically talk about... feelings and needs, but people aren't typically honest about anything really in our culture, you know, and it's seen as a sign of weakness or vulnerability to reveal feelings or to, you know, have any kind of honest conversation often. So those are two that I don't know how we can address them, but we'll talk about this the rest of this email. Okay. So Debbie goes on, this is her next point. You were at one point discussing how Stephanie tried using NVC with someone when it was not her conflict, it was someone else's. And yes, I did talk about this example where there were two of my friends that were having a conflict. I was kind of related to it. It did involve me, but the main conflict was between them. And I tried to, I guess, intervene or solve the conflict.
Or try and get both of their needs met using empathy.
Yeah. And at that time, I was really new to NVC. It was probably, like, one of my first experiences with using it at all. So I don't think that I did it very well. Mm-hmm. It was definitely, like, a noob experience, but I did try. And, you know, that's part of how you learn anything is trying it, right? And I learned a couple things and learned from my mistakes, and there were some good things that came out of it, too. Okay, so then Debbie goes on. Stephanie was trying to see if she could be helpful by intervening, and then you discussed whether or not that could work. Somewhere in the videos posted by Wes, there's an interview where Marshall Rosenberg explains a role play that he did at some convention. A son wanted Marshall to help him communicate with his father, and although Marshall was unsure of how it could work, what ended up happening is that Marshall played the role of the dad and talked to the son. However, the dad was there observing the interaction. This had a good ending, which of course could be why it was used as an example. We may not be hearing about the failures. So she's suggesting role play as a way to intervene in a conflict between two people. And
role play with the third person there, apparently.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and then the third person says, well, that's what I would say, or that's not what I would say.
I don't see how that could be a good thing, really. Because one person who's apparently the third party is role playing one of the two people in the conflict, and he may not be saying, you know, he might not have the same mindset as that person, might not have the same needs. It might just not go in the same direction as it would if there weren't role-playing, if there were the two people communicating.
Right.
Might not go down the same path to any kind of solution.
Yeah, but that's why the third person is there to correct the role-player if the role-player goes wrong. But
then why don't they participate instead of correcting a role-player?
Well, sometimes there's just such... so much history of feelings and so much enemy imagery, as they would probably say. But yeah, I mean, I kind of agree. I don't know if I'm at that stage yet to be able to be such a successful NVC user that, or so proficient in NVC or whatever, that I could roleplay like that successfully. I mean, I guess I could have tried that. That's a good suggestion.
Mm-hmm. Maybe you should have just broken out some puppets.
Oh, no. Yeah, the puppets freak a lot of people out, I have to say. I think that's why a lot of people kind of shy away from this, because it seems really like new agey, kind of hippy-dippy.
Yeah.
Like, just... I really tend to shy away from that stuff, because it like, when I saw puppets the first time...
That's quite judging.
Well, I'm feeling... Okay, so when I first saw... when I first saw this video with the puppets... I felt conflicted, because on one hand, Wes was the one who told me about this at first, and everything that Wes tells me about is very interesting, and it usually turns out to be something that's really relevant and cool. So I wanted to check it out because there was such a good track record there of finding interesting stuff. On the other hand, I saw these puppets and I was like, "What? What is this?" And it reminded me of, you know, a kumbaya kind of drum circle type thing. And I tend to stay away from that stuff because I get turned off by the new age, anything that seems new agey or hippie or anything like that. And indeed, when I was researching NVC, I found a couple of podcasts that labeled themselves as about NVC. And I listened to them and they were like this hippie Unity Church spiritual BS, which...
Now that sounds kind of jackal to me.
Well, it was something that I definitely was not interested in, and it involved religion, which was a huge turnoff to me, and that's not something I want to mix in with this. But I think it is possible to take the communication elements from NVC, and NVC itself is not a religious thing or a spiritual thing or anything like that. It's just a communication technique that happens to be adopted by hippies sometimes and new agey spiritual people, and it's important, I guess, not to conflate those two. So anyway, so Debbie goes on with her email. So my point in bringing this all up is that maybe it could work for third-party intervention to some extent, but it appears to me that in all the videos I've watched from Marshall, even when he's working with warring tribes and such, what he's doing as a third party is working very hard to get the people who are having the conflict into the same room actually communicating with each other.
It seems like it would be more effective.
Yeah.
Even if more difficult.
Yeah, and he even says in his book and his videos and stuff that a lot of the negotiations that he's done between these like warring tribes, it's taken him months to actually get them to agree to like just be in the same room with each other.
I've also heard that afterwards, months later or whatever, however much time later, they war again. They battle.
Right, because they haven't...
They solved a conflict. They didn't learn anything.
Incorporate this language into their own vocabulary, I guess.
Right.
So, yeah, and that is true. Okay, so then she goes on and she says, he mentions in an interview that it took 6 months of hard work for his team to get one group of people together, but once he did, real change began to occur because then they could see each other as humans and took away the enemy imagery. So, yeah, this is the thing that you just mentioned, Mike. Why should I empathize with this person?
Yeah.
You know?
Well... I don't know. It also seems to me the 6 months of hard work just to get people to agree to try this seems like, okay, maybe this will work. Maybe nonviolent communication can work. But wow, what a load of effort in order to solve a conflict. My God, am I going to have to be talked to and worked with for 6 months before I'm even willing to try and empathize with my person? And then does it take six more months of empathy with that person, you know, talking before I can empathize and before we come up with a solution? And a year of my time, is it worth it to solve this conflict or are there other solutions that are better for me?
Yeah, I absolutely see what you're saying, Mike. And there have been times, you know, when I've said, hey, is this really going to is this a good use of my time?
Right.
Do I really care that much about this relationship that I want to spend all this time working on it?
Maybe that's valid.
Yeah. Oh, of course it is, because you only have so much time in life. But I mean, for something where your immediate safety is being threatened every day, like you're in a warring tribe or something, then maybe it is worth spending 6 months to get people together and try to talk, because then you won't be feeling threatened every day.
Right. I think there are times when it's worth it, and it seems like there are times when it's just not.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Absolutely. Yeah, that's a very good point. Okay, so then Debbie goes on, her next point. As to the why are you psychoanalyzing remarks, and I think Debbie's referring to the other common criticism of NVC that I've encountered, which is that it sounds unnatural, or it sounds like not natural language or something right. like that, or it sounds like psychoanalysis. I've heard variations of that theme.
Yeah, so someone might just be, might hear this language and think hippy-dippy or think,
yeah,
you're psychoanalyzing me, and be put on the defensive.
Yes.
Okay, or yeah, not be put on the defensive,
may even
be
think,
on the defensive.
You know, I've had people say something to the effect of, oh, you're using some mental tricks on me. I don't know what you're trying to manipulate me. You're trying to
These are not the droids you're looking for. And I did do the hand motion.
Yes. That's funny. Yeah, so, I mean, it's not... okay, we'll read the rest of Debbie's comment. She says, as to the why are you psychoanalyzing remarks, I wondered if that would happen to me. If I heard the details of the example right, maybe it happened with Stephanie because she did not share her feelings and needs first and started asking the other person about his or hers. Also, Mike made an excellent point about what is happening when someone says that. Obviously, this person's needs are not being met when they say this. It's their jackal talking.
I think what I said was, when someone says, why are you psychoanalyzing me? Their needs aren't being met. Some need.
Oh, sure.
But I think I mainly, my point was, what would someone into NVC say to that?
I think a person who is using NVC would maybe say something like, so you're annoyed because you're wanting to be talked to in more normal language or something like that.
Are you annoyed?
Yeah, or...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, that's the point. You don't have to say, are you annoyed? Because that's like
you
this formulaic
just...
phrasing. Like, right, there are different ways you could say it.
Is NVC good? I mean, is it good in NVC to assume? To say, because you just
well,
said
yeah,
you're annoyed
because... Well, yeah,
because
the person will correct you if you're wrong.
Okay. So, that sounds like
well,
not
it was,
healthy
it was
to
a
me.
Question. It's saying, so you're annoyed because you want to be talked to in more normal language?
See, but to me...
It's a question.
It is a question, but to me that sounds not really condescending, but presumptuous, I guess. Or, you know, judging. Because if I don't say, I'm annoyed, and I say, blah, 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 and I'm not saying I'm annoyed, and then you say, you're annoyed because of this, it seems like you're assuming I'm annoyed. And maybe I am, but I haven't said it. You know what I mean? I'm not expressing this well. When you say the question, so you're annoyed because of X, well, maybe you're guessing X, mm-hmm. but maybe you're guessing that I'm annoyed.
Yeah, that's the whole point, though, is to guess how the person's feeling and what they're needing.
Yes, but you're not guessing. You're saying... I don't know. It sounds condescending to me. It sounds like you're... It just doesn't sound... It doesn't make me feel good hearing that. I can't put it into words well. But that's really a technicality, because it's just in the phrasing.
No, it's actually really important, because if there's something that... If there's something about that kind of phrase that triggers...
defensiveness
or annoyance or whatever, and any kind of feeling that's similar to that,
right. But it might
not going to foster communication.
That's true. And in some people, perhaps them, you know, with their body language and their words expressing annoyance, maybe then you picking up on that and saying you're annoyed because, maybe that's good for them. Maybe they'll say, yes, I'm annoyed because of that. But for me, it just sounds condescending, so certainly contextual.
Yeah, yeah, this is tough.
Yeah.
I mean, I think what I've told myself or what I've thought about this is that as time goes on, it sounds more natural.
Yeah,
practice makes perfect, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we've grown up, you know, speaking a certain way, and if we're trying to change that, it's probably going to sound a little bit awkward at first, mm-hmm. right? You know, like when people... This is actually an analogy that somebody made. One of my friends said, you know, when you first start to speak Spanish, you ask for the quesadilla when you first
tacos.
Yeah, you speak. It just sounds really awkward, right?
Yeah.
And so then as time goes on, you develop a little accent and, you know, it sounds a lot more natural. So maybe that problem takes care of itself, or maybe it doesn't. Maybe this culture is just... If people don't kind of conform to a certain way of speaking, then it ends up sounding really awkward and sticking out.
Maybe
NVC by its very nature sticks out. I don't know.
Or just for now.
Or it could be just for now.
This progression of humanity.
Yeah, right.
It could also be that No, it couldn't also be. It's definite that people who use NVC, nonviolent communication, make mistakes.
Yes.
And if you continue to use empathy and understanding and listening, then you'll probably just get over it. So you assume, like in this example, you just assumed I was annoyed because I didn't say it, and I took that defensively. You could have picked up on me reacting weird, because I'm assuming that I don't know NVC in this interchange.
Yep, sure.
And then you could have said something NVC-like. You know, I'm not good at this, but you could have said, I just said you were annoyed, and I saw you lift your shoulders. Did I assume that wrong because, or did, you know... You could mm-hmm. you could react to that, you know? You could you could correct your mistake using NVC.
Mm-hmm. Or I could use NVC silently, and I could say, to myself.
Yes.
I could say silently in my mind, it seems like Mike is a little bit annoyed because of I'm speaking very differently than I'm usually speaking.
Right.
Maybe I should make an effort to phrase things more naturally.
Could be.
Something like that.
There's certainly nothing wrong with that, but I think... It's better to talk to the other person and find out what, you know, you don't, again, if you're going to assume I'm annoyed, maybe you're making the problem worse. Who knows?
Maybe.
Anyway.
Yes. Okay. I don't know. It's a challenge for sure. And then Debbie goes on to say, by the way, I encourage you to use Jackal and Giraffe because it really helps in quickly understanding how to use NVC. I encourage you not to skip over this and help your audience understand it because it really helps communicate the ideas of NVC well. At first, I thought of the use of Jackal and Giraffe was lame, and the puppets were really lame, too, but wow, now I realize how effective that was in helping me to understand this particular piece of your discussion.
Lame is a judgment. Okay, I'm just kidding.
Oh, you're making a judgment. Aren't you making a judgment, Mike?
I'm making a joke.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. So, it is kind of funny. Like, there have been times when I've been listening to Marshall Rosenberg, like, kind of correcting people as they speak and saying, oh, don't say this, say this.
Uh-huh.
And this is how you say this in NVC or something like that. There have been times when I've heard him saying that and saying, well, oh, he's making a judgment.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
Or he just said not to say this, but then he said it himself. And,
right. He explains, perhaps objectively, you know, non-judgmentally, that Jackal is the, you know, metaphorically violent language.
Yeah.
And Giraffe is not.
Yeah.
And then, now that he and his audience know that, then when he says, you're using the Jackal language, he's making the judgment.
Yeah. It seems like that, for sure. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. And then Debbie says, anyway, according to NVC, this person who said I was psychoanalyzing was using Jackal language because they didn't know how else to communicate an unmet need. So someone using NVC simply learns from that and continues on.
Yeah.
You can see examples of this in Marshall's videos, too. He shows how being wrong about a need is no problem, because the Jackal in the other person has no problem telling you that you are wrong. And yes, that's definitely true.
Yep.
If you guess at someone's needs and then they correct you or they tell you that you're wrong, it's pretty rare for someone not to speak up. If you guess about someone, guess about something, you ask them, are you feeling this way? Are you needing this or whatever? And then I think it's pretty rare for someone to not correct you if you're wrong about that.
Okay.
And that's probably part of the point, because then by guessing, you're making an effort to determine what they're needing.
And
right? And it shows that you want to meet their needs. And then they adjust what you thought of as their needs. Right? They give you a better idea if you were not quite on target.
Okay.
Of what they were actually needing. And then you go from there. And then hopefully you get your needs met in the process. Yes, you should get your needs met if it's going well.
But you're saying if someone is actually empathizing with you and wondering how you're feeling and wanting to help solve whatever conflict you're having, you're saying it's really hard not to go along with that and to help the process by answering, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then it makes sense to me. But then I'm wondering, why does it take 6 months of work to get people to, like, the father and son together? 6 months of work if you empathize, people want to participate.
Yeah, I think it's probably because there's just so much enemy imagery there.
Hmm.
Yeah, I know. It's 6 months seems like a lot of work. Yeah. Yeah.
I presume 6 months means meeting for an hour once a week or something, but still.
I don't know what. I mean, yeah, there are a lot of people who say, well, I tried NVC and it didn't work. And then the person who's the NVC like
guru,
or I hate to say that because it sounds so like weird and spiritual. No, it just sounds so like new agey, and I just don't like the sound of it.
To me, guru is very computer geeky, and it just means the person who knows it all. But
I see. Oh, but okay. So then we'll use guru then. Okay. The NVC guru says, well, you know, you have to have unrelenting empathy. Like, just keep going, keep empathizing, and it'll work if you're persistent. So,
see, again, now I'm not saying that's not true, but that sounds so much like a horizontal marketing sales pitch. You've just got to keep trying until it works. Now give me my, you know, cut.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it does seem like it would take an extraordinary person to keep trying for 6 months after being, you know, rejected or being, you know, of course that's Jekyll language, right? Rejected. The other person rejected me, right? It seems like it would take an unusual person to keep trying and consistently applying NVC in a situation where the other person does not apply it or doesn't use it.
Yeah.
You know, the person who's using it would need to give themselves a lot of empathy too, because
right, this kind of person must have enormous patience and empathy, you know, as a trait. And it may be something that I don't have and have to build up, or don't have and will never have, who knows?
Or you just need to give yourself a lot of empathy.
Perhaps.
Turn the giraffe ears inward, as they say.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's not a bumper sticker. Turn your giraffe ears inward. Honk if your giraffe ears are pointed inward. Okay.
Can giraffes honk?
I want to know where they'd put a bumper sticker.
Maybe. Yeah, that's true. Well, they do have that, 7 feet of real estate on their neck. Probably put it somewhere on their neck. Okay. So anyway, Debbie goes on. This is the last part of her email. But the giraffe doesn't care. Giraffe ears do not hear any of this as being directed at them. And so they never take it personally. So yeah, that's another important point. Giraffes never take things personally, because they see every, you know, so-called
personal attack,
mean thing or personal attack as just an expression of an unmet need. And so it's easy to not take that personally when you see it as such. And when a person says, oh, you're such an idiot, you're such a jerk, I hate you, you know, all that stuff. Well, that's not really what they're saying. What they're really trying to say is, hey, this need is not being met. I need this.
See, again, this makes a lot of sense to me. But it seems like if someone was throwing out insults just because their needs are not getting met, and they were very specific, you're fat and your nose is big and your breath stinks and I don't want you, you know, in my face. That may be because their needs are not being met, but that's pretty some specific. Those could be true.
Well, in that case, their need for space is not being met. Their need for cleanliness
right,
is not
that,
being met.
And that could be why they're saying it, but that doesn't mean it's not true that you're fat and you smell.
Well, but you don't have to take that stuff personally.
Oh, that's still true. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
You just say, okay, you translate it, and you say, okay, this person is saying your breath stinks and I hate you and you're fat and ugly.
Right.
Okay, they're needing a lot more space. I'm going to leave.
Okay. Yeah. And shower.
And then maybe they turn their giraffe ears inward and they say, oh boy, I'm feeling pretty hurt. My need for respect was not met, or something like that. You know, who knows what it would be. But anyway, this is a hypothetical situation. So Debbie said the giraffe doesn't care. The giraffe ears do not hear any of this is being directed at them, and they never take it personally. According to Marshall, the giraffe says anything worth doing is worth doing wrong. And I think he actually said anything worth doing is worth doing poorly.
Which
is very similar. And then Debbie says, this meaning that you just keep moving forward as the giraffe and work towards finding out what the other person is needing and feeling. So yeah, that's certainly applies to our practice of nonviolent communication, or my practice anyway. I definitely feel like I've been just muddling through it at times, and I've definitely thought
self-learning.
This is a practice run. Yeah. And then she says, I hope this is all making sense and will be helpful to you. I've also CC'd Wes. I think he'll be interested too. And thanks for reading this. And thanks for your openness in discussing the possibilities of nonviolent communication. Yay. And thank you Debbie, for that awesome email.
I want to point out that, in an email exchange, Wes did correct her with that poorly, with what Rosenberg mm-hmm. said, like what you said.
Yes.
So it is poorly, not
that's where
wrong.
I get it. Thank
Anything
you, Wes.
Worth doing is worth doing poorly.
Yeah. There we go. So anyway, yeah, and I guess we should plug Debbie's blog again. She's the Suburban Voluntarist at blogspot.com. And thank you, Debbie, for the feedback about that. Mike, was there anything else? I guess you said you haven't really been too into NVC or anything, but
right.
Have you had any other experiences? Have you heard about it, heard about other people using it, or
actually
in the Liberty
no.
media?
No, no. Mm-hmm. And I have no more experience with it, although other than thinking about it, not even consciously practicing it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I have kind of closed my world recently. I have one thing I'm focusing on in my life
mm-hmm.
pretty severely. And
which is the Gulch.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So...
did you not want me to...
No, okay. It's just another website we're going to plug now in the show notes. But because
Spending
of that,
reach,
I haven't
baby.
Been very social. I haven't been very active.
We are reaching so far. We're like a giraffe with a 7-foot neck. Did you know they still have the same number of vertebrae? Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like spaced out.
And a black tongue. And the biggest heart of any land mammal.
Wow. Now I'm going to have to go to like giraffes on Wikipedia in the show notes or something.
That'll be a really big reach. Hey, you could make giraffedandgulch.com. You could have
Very
a bunch
punny.
Of giraffes in the backyard. Okay, this
All
has
right.
been derailed very severely.
Thank you, Debbie, for the for listening to us. You heard about our show from Wes's, right?
Yes,
okay.
That's right.
And thanks for listening and for writing us with your opinions.
Yes.
With your thoughts.
And I was going to say, Mike, I was asking you if you had any experience with NVC that you wanted to share or anything else you wanted to talk about. And I've had... a couple of other experiences in my personal life, but one that kind of relates to Liberty, and that was that recently we had this situation where Pete Eyre was arrested for wearing a hat in court.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, completely ridiculous, and it's been all over the Liberty media recently, and it's been talked about and blogged about a lot. But when it happened, I'm sure most people have heard about it, but for anyone who hasn't...
I actually read an article about it on Yahoo News from the AP, I think.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes, that is very cool that it's getting some yeah. mainstream coverage. Yeah, so basically what happened was Pete is a very active activist, I guess you could say. He had this Project Liberty on tour with his friend Ademo. He's now Ademo.
Right.
He used to be Adam, but now he's Ademo. So... they had this Project Liberty on tour where they traveled around the country and did Liberty outreach and stuff. So then they landed back in Keene for a while and were out at a friend's trial for some other ridiculous charge supporting
Not
someone
crime.
Who had done some civil disobedience.
Right.
And so Pete was in trial just to support in court just to support his friend. And it was minus 18 degrees out. It was like one of the coldest days on record for that day or that time of the year in the winter. And he's in court. He's wearing a hat. And the bailiff comes up to him and says, take off that hat. And Pete says, well, he starts asking some questions. I don't remember exactly what he said, but
okay.
Starts asking some questions. And next thing you know, he's getting tackled and by three cops. And they're putting their knee on his head and just really violent. And there's video footage of this, and it's unbelievable. The first thing that you think is just, wow, did it really have to come to this? Like, what just happened there?
Yeah.
It happened so suddenly. And I was thinking about that and how nonviolent communication could have applied to that situation, if at all. I mean, it seems like an attack when something like that happens. It's almost.
Like,
no, it is like an attack.
Yeah, was an attack.
I was going to say, it's almost as if... it's like a crazy lunatic that's attacking you,
oh.
and you cannot reason with them. You cannot, really talk to them. It's just that it happened so fast. It's very difficult to imagine even having the time to have that kind of conversation with a cop like that, who's
yeah.
just coming towards you and touching you. And what would you even say? I need some space here. Would they even be responsive to
no,
that? Probably
no.
not.
See, this is another good example of, this is a very good example of why I am not convinced that NVC is the solution to all conflicts, because they are a person, when a cop is being a cop mm-hmm. and citing you for whatever nonviolent crime they think they need their money for, I was biased. that is a person who is not, who does not care about your needs, you know? And then if you want to just expand the metaphor a little, they're a crook, they're a thug. So why would any thug, like the rapist in the example, that's great that he didn't rape her and only stole her purse, but I don't know if every rapist is going to care about your needs or even their own. They don't care about themselves much.
That they do care about their own needs.
I don't think they do. I think some people don't care about themselves or care so little about themselves that they go out and they get, you know, they get high on heroin and they, and or they go beat people up for and steal their stuff and they just don't care. And why would these people suddenly listen to one person trying to empathize with them? Maybe they would.
Or they're so used to getting their needs met by horrible strategies that that's the only thing they've ever known and they can't imagine anything else. But yeah, it just seems like there's so much time pressure in that kind of a situation where someone is getting arrested and there's really not much of a lead up or a build up to it.
Right.
There were literally like 2 seconds in between the and time this bailiff said, take off your hat. And Pete said, wait a minute. What's that policy?
Right. And this isn't the next first time with these very people. There's other videos like when Ian Freeman was jailed for 90 days in 6 seconds.
Yeah. Yeah. The judge said, have a seat. And Ian said something like, well, I don't know if I want to sit down or I'm doing this under direct.
He didn't even get that far.
Yeah, it was like 2 seconds and then he was, 90 days for contempt of court. So it seems like you know, it's on one hand, yes, it's crucial to practice this stuff because we need to be able to do it without even thinking if this is like a valid approach and it actually works and it's worthwhile.
Right.
It would need to be done really on the fly, like very seamlessly.
Mm-hmm.
And two, I don't know, I have a little bit of doubt about whether there's actually time to do. I mean, I could see saying like, okay, you use these techniques to prevent that aggression from even happening in the moment, but how could that have been done? It's just so quick sometimes.
Right. And you know what else is something worth pondering? If you take someone like in a position of a cop, maybe their needs are being met.
Oh, their needs are being met.
Maybe
they're being met at the expense of a lot of other things. Maybe
that's a whole other issue, and I agree with you that shouldn't happen. But why would a cop stop and listen or care or be empathized with when his needs are being met? His needs are, hey, I get to go hurt people. I get to go, even if they're not hurting, if they get a paycheck. Yeah, I get paid to go out and issue orders and to write these tickets that demand money. Mm-hmm. My needs are being met. I'm getting health insurance. I'm getting a good, solid job. I'm serving the community. Mm-hmm. People love cops and need cops.
Sure.
They're mistaken, but their needs are being met. Why would they bother being empathized with?
Well, because their needs are being met, but in ways that are very costly because they're at the expense of their own integrity, their own morality. They're doing things that are hurting other people, and they're
also
doing things that are, you know, sometimes dangerous. And so, you know, maybe their need for safety is not being met.
But that's true.
But yeah, I mean, I think the challenge is to show them how they can get those needs for order and safety and
whatever
security and respect and all those other things that these people need or want, how they can get those things in ways that aren't so costly, that don't come at the expense of other people being hurt and their freedom stolen. And
if it can take 6 months to get a father and son to even talk to each other, or was it 6 months for the resolution?
Mm-hmm.
If it can take 6 months for that, then you're not going to have a good result with NVC with a cop in 6 seconds when he's beating you up. It's going to be a conversation that has to happen outside of a cop's duties of harassing you.
I think that's probably true. However, just think about how many people expect to have liberty in our lifetime, really.
Yeah.
I mean, there are a few people who even think that that's possible. There are many people who think it's like a multi-generational process. Now, right. I don't agree with that. I think that there could be liberty in our lifetime, but I don't think anyone really expects it to happen on a very quick time scale. So it is worth doing.
By the way, for those who think it is a multi-generational process, it has been multi-generation. So why couldn't it happen and in ours?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, one generation ago, most of the time, women were like stuck in the kitchen, barefoot and pregnant. Yeah. And some places they still are, but we're working on that, right? So, okay. Anyway, I think it's very interesting to be able to apply these things to liberty activism, and I'm really curious to see how this goes. I know that Wes is planning a Complete Liberty podcast about, specifically about NVC and cops, like about talking to cops.
Wow.
So I'm really curious to hear what he says, and maybe we'll do another follow-up with him or something, or with us, just us, and we'll discuss that more, because I'm very interested to hear this. So anyway, thank you for the comments, Debbie.
Yes, thanks for listening and the comments and the question and your thoughts. And if you other listeners would like to ask a question.
Yes, you can email us at questions@porktherapy.com. It's been a long night.
Or call us at area code 419-PT-LOVE-4. Record your question and we'll play it on the show.
Indeed. And thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
They're two crazy porks who host this show. They give relationship advice that you ought to know. Your thirst for entertainment, they will quench, cause Stephanie's a darling and Mike is a mensch. Pork therapy, advice this good is a rarity. It's cool, fun, and introspective. Relationship talk from a liberty perspective. Oh, did I mention you can leave a message, you can voice a question, a joke, a comment, or something more at 419-PT-LOVE-4.